Thanks for listening to The Drive on Demand, presented by Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment.
Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766.
Or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus, D-Mac, and Nick Ferguson.
I'm reading a fascinating article in the Chicago Tribune today, guys, that a listener sent to me. And it's a real deep dive into how the Bears picked up Mitch Trubisky, how they decided between Mitch Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, and Mahomes. And it's a long piece. I'm trying to get through it the best that I can. But what is fascinating about it, and I'm relating this to Drew Locke, as he's coming back to practice, is that the big separator between Houston, Kansas City, and Chicago wasn't the fact that you move up to get the quarterback you want. All three teams did that. The biggest difference was the general manager of the Bears was not on board with John Fox, the head coach.
Bad choice.
Foxy didn't even know. Right. Wasn't Foxy like, he wasn't even like in the building or something, right?
Didn't even know. Whereas Watson and Mahomes, O'Brien and Andy Reid were just in total lockstep in the entire process with the decision. And the love affair for Mahomes with Kansas City was unbridled. However, it's an interesting article because if you go back to that draft, there were tons of people that thought Mitch Trubisky was the best out of those three guys. Lots. Plenty.
I don't recall that.
The article,
I believe you. I just don't. My memory doesn't remember that.
Well, the article goes through it. And the Bears themselves in multiple personnel departments thought that Trubisky was the best. It wasn't just Pace, the GM, shoving it down everybody's throat. He, like, told them, go and you tell me and let's compare notes, basically like that. So, but the difference was, well, what is the point of doing all that if you're not in line with the coach? If the coach doesn't use you the right way? This is the classic Moneyball, the movie Moneyball sort of thing. What is the point if I put this team together if you don't use them the way that they're built to be together?
But this happens all the time in professional sports, especially in football. I mean, the idea is that you want the
GM.
It's
moronic.
Yes, it is. I'm not agreeing that it is a logical way of doing things, but it happens a lot in the NFL. This is why both John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan both have six-year contracts. And before John got the job, I mean, obviously, you know, he had to talk to Kyle to make sure that they were on the same page. And now they're seeing the fruits of their labor. But in this case with the Chicago Bears, you know, it's like, why would you do that? If you have a head coach and you hired him based on bringing the same scheme.
Because Foxy was a lame duck.
That's right.
They knew they were going to get rid of him.
You know you're going to survive the head coach and you don't have any plans right for the head coach.
He was going to be out the door.
Which is, that is also moronic.
Correct.
If you don't have plans for your head coach, move on from your head coach before you draft somebody.
Correct.
So that you can draft somebody that your coach wants.
But also in that statement, if you're going to get rid of Fox, bring in the coach that you want to have in so you know that you're bringing the right players to fit his scheme. Yep.
But sometimes, agreed. But they were trying to be too smart. The Bears were. And I think what happens at that point is the development of the quarterback can be stunted. And maybe if we look in the case of Josh Rosen, ruined. You know, if you just don't go down the most supportive path. I think the big takeaway from like John Harbaugh with Lamar Jackson, seeing that interaction, is just they just did go all in. And maybe that matters actually more seriously than anything.
Sort of. But you got to be careful when you associate the going all in for a player, right? Like Lamar Jackson, people talk about that, and it makes sense with Lamar Jackson because you had to recreate football at the NFL level. You had to go all in for a quarterback that doesn't fit the traditional NFL mold. A guy like Josh Rosen, and I'm not just getting stuck on him, but you could pick any other quarterback, that's supposed to be like a prototypical NFL QB. there's not really anything to go all in on per se.
So let me ask your opinions based on that. And it's a really great article. I'll retweet it. And it does go to the core of the things that, like, me and Evans have been yelling at each other about. And I think there is some common ground. No matter where you pick a quarterback, if the coach of the team is not on board, or you can't get him on board with why you're drafting whoever you're drafting seriously, what's the point? Do you guys think Vic Fangio was on board with Drew Lock?
No.
Absolutely not.
Why?
Yeah, I do not. I think if you look at the IR situation, the way that's been handled, any coach that has a vested interest in somebody that's on the IR has a, well, number one, they'd have a vested interest because from day one, that was your guy, right? And number two, that would mean that you want to bring him back as quickly as possible because we're human beings and we like to be right. As a human being, if you believe that your assessment of Drew Lock was right in the draft, well, you would want to get him on the field. And Vic Fangio, man, he's avoiding this like the plague. And if you listen to the pressers, you listen to everything that's going on week in, week out, holy cow, he is dodging bullets anytime he is asked about Drew Lock. If you were all in on Drew Lock, if you believed in Drew Lock, you'd find a way.
Fangio wasn't all full head of steam on this whole Drew Lock thing because, understand, I mean, we're talking about 32 years plus years coaching in the NFL. He wanted to get one of his guys as a defensive coordinator. So to go out and draft with the first three picks, three offensive guys, and I can't get my guy to what it was a fourth round getting Draymond Jones and then Justin Hollins, that didn't set him well. That didn't set him up for success. I want to be able as a coach, if you're hiring me to do a job and the reason you're hiring me because I was great at it somewhere else, give me my pieces to be successful.
Why did we hire Vic Fangio? Why did John Elway hire Vic Fangio then? To be a head coach.
Well, he didn't hire him to choose personnel. I think that was part of why John Elway actually liked Vic Fangio, because Vic Fangio has been around a long time.
So he liked Vic Fangio because John could pick whoever he wanted for offense? Sort of.
Well, I mean, not just offense, but I mean, generally speaking,
whatever.
You knew that Vic Fangio, he doesn't really have interest in doing the personnel
side. And was Gary Kubiak going to be a pain in the butt?
Well, hold on. That doesn't really work.
Yes.
Yes. But it doesn't really work, T-Mac, because John wanted Gary Kubiak.
So
you can't use that against John because he wanted Gary.
So John wanted Gary Kubiak. He also wanted Drew Lock. Then he hired Fangio to come in here because he had more expensive as a defensive coordinator than Vance, and I can sell that to the fan base for them to go, hey, I've turned a corner.
Do you guys think if Gary Kubiak, who was close to being part of this offensive staff, can we all agree that it was at least close?
Oh, yeah.
It was being discussed.
It was highly suggested.
All right. Do you think Drew Lock would be on this team?
No, he would not be on this team.
Why?
Because he doesn't really fit what Kubiak wants to do. He's not a Kirk Cousins type of guy, right? Kub has Kirk Cousins, the guy who he wanted, kind of liking Trevor Siemian, but Trevor just didn't display the type of traits that Kirk Cousins has now.
Would Kubiak
I don't know, man. Kubs let Paxton Lynch get drafted. So just because Gary Kubiak is on the staff, that doesn't mean that he could be able to prevent or choose his handpicked guy. He would be the offensive coordinator. He's not the personnel guy. He's not in charge of the draft. He let Paxton Lynch get developed or get picked, so he certainly could let Drew Lock get picked.
All right, when we come back, the first day for Drew Lock, we can dig into it. And the Vikings, they're an offensive team, the good old Minnesota Vikings, and we'll tell you why next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's D-Mac, Nick, and Tyler.
Steven, on a sunny day. Stone Temple Pilots.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
On a sunny trail on yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Sound just like him.
Close. All right, it is Hot Take
Tuesday.
let's have some fun. 303-713-1043. And for a prize for the best hot take, a four-pack of movie passes to see both Terminator Dark Fate and Playing with Fire. So the winner will receive a four-pack to both movies, valid at any Denver area Regal Theater. What's the value of that these days for a four-pack? Well, I suppose if you wanted to make it that way.
No way.
Or you could go one day and maybe another day or whatever.
You would have awesome. To.
Can I give you a hot take and win the prize myself?
No, you cannot.
Why
my
not?
Friends. So I'm sorry.
I don't see that. There's a disclaimer in there expressing that. Where is that?
That's me telling you.
That's all
you.
Bonneville that's, contest.
Right. Come on, man.
But great prize. Movies are so expensive these days, right? So for two movies, a four-pack, that's an awesome value. So on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, or you can simply call us like listener Nick did. Nick, you're on the fan. What's your hot take?
I say the Broncos win by 13.
All right. Any reason why?
Why not?
There you go.
Bam!
And just like that, Nick's in the running for the movie tickets.
Well, I say they're going to go 12-4. Why?
That's right.
They just might.
Hey Nick, from another Nick. That's right. Well, here's the difference between that Nick and this Nick over here. I actually gave a detailed explanation.
Yeah, would you like to defend yourself a little bit? Because listening to Evans this morning, it's as if you'd had no will of your own that Mike just completely conned you into coming up with that 12-4.
I consider myself the king of teases.
He didn't con me into it. He asked me, well, what were my predictions for the upcoming season? And I just kind of paused for a second. He was like, oh, I mean, you know, come up with something. Give me something. So I said 12-4. And he just thought that was utterly ridiculous.
Okay.
But I said to him.
As it was.
I said to him, I say, listen, let me break it down. And I broke it down. Game by game.
Were you hoodwinked by Evans?
No, I wasn't. Mm-hmm.
He has mystical powers. It's happened to the best of us.
Mm. No, he didn't sprinkle any magic pixie dust on me.
You'd rather have people think through your own, you know, deductive thinking you came to 12-4 rather than Evans convincing you.
Which one's worse?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a...
He didn't convince me of anything. If you go back and you listen to...
So he had nothing to do with your 12-4.
If you go back and listen to the breakdown, mm-hmm. I gave it game by game. And if you look at the way the Broncos season has unfolded thus far, a lot of things that I said when I gave that breakdown, they were all there.
So it had nothing
like
about Evans.
They're all there.
Nothing about
like
Evans.
What?
It was all you.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it was my fault in believing in the fact that Fangio could come and use his defense and play great football, and that Joe Flacco was going to come and do something great. The theory was there.
Okay.
It was the practicality part that's where I missed
it. I bought fairy dust before. No big deal.
Did
no
you
big
really?
Deal.
Where'd you get fairy dust?
I bought it for my daughter in Seattle.
Fangio, on the hot take here, Fangio will refuse to take Locke off IR, but Elway will do it. So Fangio refuses to play him, which would be unbelievable because that is more or less what happened with Gary Kubiak and Paxton Lynch.
That's not a terrible hot take, is it?
No.
That could totally happen. Although, generally speaking, that only happens with head coaches. If you're going to totally just go mutiny against your GM, that generally speaking only happens with head coaches that are lame ducks. It happened with Jay Gruden. He refused to play Dwayne Haskins. He knew he was on the way out the door. Bill Callahan's taking over. It happened with Jay Gruden earlier in his career as well. His first year, guess what happened? He walked into a hot mess with Robert Griffin, and Mike Shanahan was refusing to play him. He'd replaced him as our starter. Then Jay got the job, and he was told, you're going to play Robert. And what do you think Jay did? He played Robert because he was the new guy. Vic's pretty fresh to go mutiny.
Well, see, that would be a bad thing for any coach to do because you're setting yourself up for failure. When I played here for Mike Shanahan, and there was a CU buff who was our DB coach, he was told by Mike Shanahan going into the game against the Falcons, hey, I want Champ Bailey on Peerless Price.
Wait, who was this?
I don't want to name names. I just kind of toss it out there. I don't want to name names, but he's a CU, former CU buff. I gave you something right there.
All right, I'll Google it.
There you go.
He was the DB's coach.
There you go. There you got it.
Can you just save me the Google?
No, I don't want to do that. Just look it up.
More hot takes. My hot take on the text line is Brandon Allen is lost for the game. Brett Rypien comes in, and the Broncos lose 30-6. Thus, the Drew Lock era begins against Buffalo. That's from Firestone Sally. Mm. Woo! That's a good one there, Sally.
Well, real quickly, I finished up this story, but this particular DB coach was told to put Champ Bailey on Peerless Price. He didn't do it. He decided to put Kelly Herndon on Peerless Price, who actually lit us up, I think, for maybe 126. Needless to say, when we came back from the bye, that particular coach was gone. Moral to the story, listen to your head coach. Listen to those individuals above you, even though you may not agree with them, because if you do that, you find yourselves on the outs on an unemployment line. So I don't think Vic Fangio is going to do that.
That's only true if the guy above you has guaranteed job security, which is probably true in this case. It's probably true in this case. But you could go mutiny against a guy if you think he's a lame duck.
Let's go to Chris. Chris, what's your hot take?
My hot take is that Brandon Allen gets injured. Maybe Brett Rypien doesn't come in during the game, but from one week to another, in like a few weeks down the line, and instead of going with Drew Lock after he's been activated, they go with Brett Rypien to start the game anyway.
Instead of Drew Lock, even though Drew Lock would be available to go. Appreciate it, Chris. I mean, if really, boy, can you imagine Rypien actually gets priority over Lock in a situation like that?
Got $100,000+ to sign here.
He did?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Whose guy was he?
You wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised because just like Tyler said, look, you don't give a guy who you stashed on a practice squad that amount of money.
He was undrafted versus a second rounder, though. I would be very surprised. I was just saying they gave him a lot of money, but I would be extremely surprised.
It's a good hot take.
But Brett can do some things that Drew can't do at this point.
We didn't see it in training camp.
Really? Did you watch Brett during training camp?
I watched training camp, and you didn't really see a lot of it because usually what happens in training camp, there's a pecking order as far as who gets all the reps, right? And because Drew is a second-round draft choice, he's going to get more of the priority reps over Brett Rypien.
Yep.
But I'm just going based on the skill set coming out of college as far as the things that Brett could actually do that Drew Lock could not do.
Wow. So that's how bad we were at evaluating? We should have drafted Brett Rypien in the second round, not Drew Lock?
There's a possibility based solely on these two quarterbacks and the types of systems that they came out of the collegiate level and looking at the system that Scangarello is employing right now.
Jason, you're on the fan. What's your hot take, Jason?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
My hot take's opposite of what the last couple of callers were talking about. What if Brandon Allen's the second coming of Tom Brady? I mean, he was drafted in the sixth round.
Now we're talking.
His first couple of years.
So Brandon Allen overcomes a 10.5-point Vegas line.
That's right,
and
G-Mac
leads the Broncos to victory over the Vikings and establishes himself as the next Tom Brady.
I like it.
Yeah. You never know.
You never know. There have been 45 players drafted in the sixth round in the Tom Brady era, and three of them have winning records. 26 of them haven't even started at all. But you never know. You never know.
Hey, we got a 1.4% chance of going to the playoffs right now.
Are you curious who those three quarterbacks out of 45 actually are who have a winning record in the NFL since 1999?
What is Brady, Tyrod Taylor, and
Brandon Allen.
There you go. So Brandon, he's already dead. He's halfway dead.
Gardner Minshew unfortunately fell off the list. He was there, but he lost. He's 4-4.
Oh, bummer.
Right.
Gardner, what are you doing, man?
He was close.
Gosh,
he was close.
500 as a rookie sixth rounder.
More of your, not bad, right? Not good enough to overcome.
It's actually fantastic.
Yeah, no doubt. But you're not saying, is Gardner Minshew the next Tom Brady?
Nope. But I think he should still be starting, by the way.
Is Tyrod Taylor the next Tom Brady?
Clearly not.
Are the other 43 guys who have losing records who were drafted in the sixth round, are they Tom Brady?
I think the teams just missed the boat on him. They misevaluated.
What kind of talent was around those guys?
There you go. Excuses left and right. Gary Kubiak week, day two. More of your hot takes. But the handling of the Peyton Manning Brock Osweiler, one of the biggest feathers in his cap. Details next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's D-Mac, Tyler, and Nick. Gary Kubiak week, day two.
Is it Bronco country or nation? Country. There you go. He always told me, don't say nation.
Oh, come on, Gary. Gary.
Well, I mean, you know, you can call it all sorts of things.
Welcome to Bronco land.
Right.
Welcome to Bronco land. Welcome to Bronco land.
Welcome to
Bronco land. Welcome to Bronco land. Welcome to Bronco land.
We could just do this all night, I guess.
What year was that?
Welcome to Bronco land.
I don't know. Not that long ago.
This is Bronco land.
Not that it matters. He's been around for a while.
It wasn't that long ago.
That was Broncos country.
That's right, Nick. Yeah, well, except let's talk to the definitive person ever with the Broncos.
Welcome to Bronco land. How'd that work out? I'd like to introduce you to the new starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos, Case Keenum.
He caught himself.
He did catch himself.
Names can be tricky.
Gary Kubiak handled. Describe the Peyton Manning Brock Osweiler situation. Tyler, you're on the team. How was it internally? How did he manage the situation?
It was non-existent, and it was like, you want to talk about mystical powers. Joking about Mike Evans, I mean, that was mystical powers. Somehow, some way, you had Peyton Manning on the bench for an injury in which I think we all assumed that he could come back from, probably quicker than he did.
Even the players?
I say that more in hindsight, I guess. At the time, it's not like I was sitting there evaluating his injury. But hindsight, I for sure believe that. At the time, regardless, you knew that Peyton Manning, Hall of Famer, statues, Peyton Manning, was on the bench. And there was a non-existent issue going on in your team in which, honestly, it was hardly even addressed internally. I mean, barely addressed. It was just Brock's our QB this week. Let's get behind Brock and let's roll. Okay. And then, hey, Peyton's back. We're going into the playoffs. Peyton's our quarterback. He's healthy. Well, let's roll.
Hold on. There was also Peyton working out with Jordan Taylor and a couple of other people. And then Dort. So what was that like?
That was Peyton internally. What was that? Is that what you're asking? Yeah. And internally, that was Peyton Manning's doing his rehab.
So you guys didn't really know?
No, I knew he was out there doing workouts. I knew that he had Harry, Mike Harrington. Mm-hmm. He was out there in the indoor, and I also knew that there was a funny video out there of Peyton flipping off the cameras. You've seen that, right?
Yes, we have.
Yeah. So we were aware that he was working out, but it is not unusual for players to have private workouts on the field with trainers before practice in the middle of the day. It happens all the time. So to us, that was just Peyton Manning doing his rehab process. It was unbelievable. Gary seriously managed that thing externally and internally beautifully.
Tyler, take me back in that time, because I know when John Fox was the head coach here and Peyton came in, it was well documented that Peyton would run certain drills by himself and Coach Fox would stand over to the side and just kind of give Peyton carte blanche to kind of do what he wanted to do. When Kubiak was here, did you notice anything like that? Because you had the clashing of two systems. Gary had the system that he wanted to run, and Peyton had the Matt Moore Colt system that he wanted to run.
No, I didn't feel the internal conflict, although I was aware that it existed, but I did not feel any sort of conflict into the nature of Peyton was out there on practice and he was sabotaging the period and would go run his own plays or anything like that. Now, in walkthrough, for sure, Peyton Manning had the authority to say, we're starting this over. I don't like the way this is going. And we would be 15 plays in and we would start the whole script over and we would begin practice late because we wanted to redo the walkthrough because Peyton Manning said so. So he had the ability to do that. But once we got into practice, No, there was, he really wasn't in control. And I do firmly believe that the Peyton Manning that I knew was different from the Peyton Manning that played before I got there. I mean, I'd heard all these stories about how, gosh, just, hey, good luck playing for Peyton, man. You're going to hate it. It's going to be terrible. I'm serious. I had been warned many, many times when I first signed here from my friends across the league, your life is about to be miserable. And it was not even remotely. Peyton was not some difficult guy to work with. He was not out there at practice just crucifying people that made mistakes. Now, I did see him more or less pull Cody Latimer off the field. I did see him more or less take him out of the game plan entirely, but it was no like public scene or anything like that. So look, maybe Peyton was different before I got there, but the Peyton Manning I worked with, he was very easy to work with.
Wait a minute, Peyton took Cody Latimer out of the entire game plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, he didn't trust him.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. He actually told the coach, from what I was told one time, why do we even bother having this guy on the team? I'm never going to throw him the ball.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
And it was almost entirely because of walkthroughs. Almost entirely.
Not a practice or a game. We're just talking walkthroughs.
Yeah. Yeah, because he wasn't running the route the way that Peyton wanted him to run it.
On the other hand, he kept Bubba Caldwell employed when nobody else would have, because he trusted him.
And Bubba was a huge contributor.
Which all of us were like, what is going on? Now, it was tricky because Cody was a second-round draft pick. But if Peyton didn't want anything to do with you, I mean, you know, that was that. He's a quarterback, yeah. Man. He's going to throw you the ball or not, right?
That's a lot of power that's given to someone who's not a head coach and who is not front office staff, that you can determine yourself that we're just going to shut this guy down completely. I've never been around that before.
That's why he's the sheriff, right? You know? And he did have that authority. I'd also heard that before I got there, Peyton would sit up there during offensive meetings when it's the entire group, and he would have the clicker. And he would be running the film, and he would be telling guys what to do, where to be, what he liked, what he did not like. I never saw that in my time with him. The only thing I would ever see him do during a team meeting to, like, interrupt is crack a joke about his Allstate commercials or something like that.
So what did Gary Kubiak do to balance that, especially knowing that Manning and Brock did not have the greatest relationship between the two of them?
Well, be more specific. What do you mean?
What characteristics did Gary Kubiak have? Was he laid back about it? Was he honest about it? I mean, how did he manage what must have been an awkward situation?
Gary Kubiak was that dude. That's how. Gary Kubiak was the dude in the room. And it wasn't Peyton Manning. It was Gary Kubiak. And everybody knew that. I think, and this is not knocking Peyton whatsoever, but I think even Peyton recognized that to a degree, that this is different. I don't have a head coach that I can just run over and do whatever I want and control the meetings. Matter of fact, Peyton Manning, before I got there, I would also hear stories of he would set the schedule. He would set the time of when you would come to work even.
So Peyton had a taste of humble pie with Gary.
I don't like the way you say that, because that implies that Gary was like putting him in his place or something. No, Gary for sure respected the heck out of Peyton. It was just different. It was just different. He wasn't the only dude.
Was that it then? Maybe just the degree of respect Manning had for Kubiak was different than the degree of respect he had for Adam Gase?
I also don't know that that's a true statement. I mean, seriously.
All right.
I mean, Adam Gase let Peyton Manning do what he wanted to do. Adam Gase developed Peyton Manning's offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Peyton Manning, which guy would you I guess respect is a strong word.
I mean, that 2012 team was unbelievable. They should have won the Super Bowl. They lost to the Ravens in double overtime. The 2013 team did go to the Super Bowl and was arguably the most, was the best offense maybe ever. I mean, it was record-setting years for Peyton. And the year they won the Super Bowl, the offense was in rough shape. It was the least productive offense statistically to ever win a Super Bowl, and Manning in one game had a 0 quarterback rating in halftime.
I'd take that offense right now.
Tyler.
We were scoring, what I don't know what the stats were, but we were definitely scoring over 20 points a game.
That's a good question. Guys, Dylan and Richie, if you could look it up, what did the Broncos average points per game? That's a really good question.
I'll guess in 24.
While they're doing that, I want to back it for a second, because you said that when Kubiak was in the room with both Brock and Peyton, he was that dude.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that mean? Because did Peyton really expect his level of authority? Because Adam Gase and John Fox allowed him to do so many different things. Run his own show.
Well, I think Peyton was just put in, for the first time in his entire career, he was a little bit uncomfortable. He was merging an offense that was half his with half Gary's. And as the season progressed, by the way, it became more and more Peyton's offense. If you really look at it, you know, we started the career with Peyton trying to play under center. And every game that went by, there would be less and less of that. There would be less and less of the running game out of the center or out of Peyton playing behind the center, and then he would go into shotgun, and we'd be running the ball out of shotgun. Matter of fact, our running game got better as we did that. I can't really explain it because it doesn't make sense with everything I know about football, but it did. And then also, as the season progressed, we had a package called Top Gun that was Peyton's deal. And when we were on the field, Peyton's calling the plays. We would have Maverick. We would have Hollywood. We would have all kinds of different plays that were all named around Top Gun characters.
Very cool.
And when we went Top Gun, Gary Kubiak was out of the picture. And it was Peyton Manning's show, and he would call the plays that he wanted.
So it's safe to say that Peyton Manning did not like the system that Gary was employing. That's why he kind of went back to what he knew from the Colts.
I didn't say that, although I think that's probably a true statement. I don't have any reason to feel that way because there was no sort of public drama. But I mean, logically, if you put yourself inside of Peyton Manning's head, yeah, of course he would prefer to run the offense he has in his entire career.
So you guys had like Goose,
Maverick.
Hollywood,
Iceman.
Oh, yes. For sure.
Did you have volleyball? And you guys would all just take your shirts off.
Maverick and Hollywood. That was a protection call. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm giving anything away right now.
I don't think you are either.
Yeah. If that's a protection call, what do you hear in there that would tell the offensive line what to do?
Well, I don't know.
Hey, what's the call?
Maverick and Hollywood.
Maverick and Hollywood. Offensive line is a pass play.
Well, that's right. I already told you it was a pass play. It's pass protection. Congrats. Yeah. There's an R and there's an L.
Yes, right? Left and right.
Yeah, except for with Peyton, it's always one level deeper. So we would do the opposite.
Nice.
So the R would really be L in our world, whereas every other team, the L is L and R is R. So it would be a slide protection to the left when we would call Maverick.
Oh, man, that's cool.
We also would have calls like...
We would have
Tyson and Pacquiao.
Top Gun, thank you. Did you have Goose?
Yeah, we did. I cannot recall
but
what
Goose
it was.
Goose died in the movie.
Yeah,
so what was the Goose play?
Maybe that's a kill-kill play.
We had
Kill-kill. Goose.
Iceman was like the fake snap, right? Like go up to the line of scrimmage and we're trying to ice them out. We're going to try to get them to jump off sides.
Nice.
Pacquiao and Hollywood, this is not related to Top Gun, but it was a call that we had. Pacquiao was what kind of puncher?
Short.
Tyson and Pacquiao would be, what was the difference?
One was a power puncher and one was kind of more of a...
We had a lefty and we had a righty.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Tyson's a right-handed puncher. It was a screen to the right.
I love the Top Gun stuff. That's awesome. Peyton with his sunglasses on and his leather jacket and you on a motorcycle.
I mean, I oiled up whenever we would call a Top Gun. I'd walk to the sideline. I'd get the Vaseline.
I mean, come on. In the volleyball game, how are you not the MVP of the volleyball game?
Yeah, backyard volleyball, you want me on your team.
I mean, you or Ryan Harris in volleyball.
Oh, please.
Right.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Right.
Come on.
I mean, can Ryan even... Could even block or
spike it on his head all day long.
It's KKFN, KKFN, HT1, Longmont, Denver. It's 5 o'clock!
Omaha!
Do you know what Omaha was?
What was Omaha?
For the love, this was like the world's best worst secret. Do you know what it was?
I do, but go ahead, tell the story.
Omaha. What did that come before every single time?
That sounds like it was an opposite call.
That's right. So he's out there. Richie just said set hut. I wasn't saying that's right to you. It was actually to Richie. I don't know if that was on air or not. But he would always say it right before we would snap the ball. So he would be out there calling his insane language that nobody understood what it was. And in reality, it was all gibberish that meant nothing to him either.
That's all it was.
Yeah. And then he would be like, all right, Omaha, Omaha, set, hut. And then we would do on the fake Omaha as well. So teams can just totally figure out the snap count, but we would do an Omaha set. So he'd say, Omaha, Omaha. But in the huddle beforehand, he would tell us it was on the fake. So Omaha meant nothing in that scenario.
You know what I recognize about, you know, Peyton Manning in my years playing against him, and it took us for some reason a while to figure it out because all the hand gyrations and the calls. But there are two clocks on the NFL field, one behind the offense and one behind the defense. And Peyton was doing all those gyrations, watching the clock behind you, watching you try to adjust to what he was doing, and then we just kind of figured out. We would just wait to the last 3 seconds on the clock, and then we were rotating to whatever defense that we were planning to do, and it would mess him up every single time.
You know how secretive he was? So we would have all these code words for all of our Top Gun packages and also different plays that were, if we're just on the line of scrimmage and he sees something he likes, he would give us a code word. When I first got to the Broncos, I got there in like, what, week 5, week 6, something like that. And I had no idea what's going on. And so all I know is I know 18 handoff. I know 2 jet. I know 3 jet, but I don't know what any of these code words mean. So I go up to my coach and I said, hey, can you give me a list of the code words and what it actually means? And he said, no. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, how do I learn them? Like, how am I supposed to get this
he
down?
He makes them up as he goes along.
No, he doesn't make them up as it goes along, but every single week he would adjust them, and he was so paranoid about people figuring out his code words that because guys like myself would join the team in the middle of the year and then guys would depart, he did not want anybody to have a physical copy of the code words.
Absolutely.
So you had to learn with your head, and you could not write it down.
It wasn't passed out.
That's awesome. Today at practice, Drew Locke practiced for the first time. And you can at DMAC 104.3, or there's all sorts of other videos out there. No pads. And, you know, we were making kind of a big deal. And we love our guy Cecil. And Cecil was kind of going on and on about stuff. But in all honesty, I was there too. And if you could really tell anything significant from today, well, you're a smarter person than I. It looked like, you know what it looked like, guys? It looked like one of the first couple days of training camp. Nothing more, nothing less. This is the way it more or less looked. They weren't in pads. They weren't, you know, running into each other. And we were only allowed to watch the first 15, 20 minutes of practice. But that being said, the clock has started. What do you think about Drew Locke being back at practice?
I'm not as excited as everyone else, but I understand the process. Before he can be viewed as a quarterback for his team, he has to practice first. What will come out of that? I don't think nothing. I mean, listen to Coach Fangio. He said it himself. Here's a kid that doesn't know how to play the quarterback position. He still doesn't know if he is a quarterback. And the fact that he's out there means absolutely nothing because the Broncos are still trying to win football games. And what that means is that they need to give Brett Rippon and Brandon Allen all the reps that they can give them. Unless the idea, the plan that no one really knows what's going on has somehow miraculously changed over the bye week, and now they want to kind of inject Drew Locke into the next two games, and that's on the road between Buffalo and Minnesota, and I don't see that being the case.
You know, it wasn't just Drew Locke who was back, too. Tim Patrick was practicing today, as he had been. Bryce Callahan sighting out there at practice with a helmet on. You know, I think, Tyler, there was a little injection of perhaps life and spirit that hadn't been there because there were new guys on the field.
Newness. You know, whenever a new guy comes around, there's always going to be energy around that. I don't know that the team would necessarily rally behind Drew Locke or Bryce Callahan, but I could understand that. You know, football coaches can be incredibly short-sighted, and I understand why. I mean, they don't have any more job security than we had as players, so everybody's trying to win now. I'm not judging them for doing it, but in reality, we know exactly what happened with Drew Locke today, and he probably got very, very little opportunity to actually practice. Vic Fangio stated that he's trying to go 4-6, right? Drew Lock is not a part of Vic Fangio's thought process this week. He's not thinking to himself, how do I get Drew Lock developed? He's not thinking, how do I get him on the field in 3 weeks? He's just trying to win a football
game
this
week.
That's cool.
You know what the first question to Coach Fangio is going to be tomorrow?
How many reps did he get?
How'd he look?
I would ask how many reps.
What'd you do for him? The first six questions, the Broncos do. Well, first of all, Fangio doesn't talk on Tuesday. He talks on Monday. He doesn't talk on Tuesday. It's a whole different thing this year. And he talks before practice, not after practice. So naturally, the first questions to him tomorrow will be about how things went today. But over under, for fun, first five questions to Vic Fangio tomorrow, over under five questions about Lock. First five, of course.
No,
five. Over under five. Five in a row about Lock. Put something on it. Put a little coffee.
I know what I want.
I say over five.
Over five.
Over five.
Under. Under. Vic Fangio, he's got a little bit of mind control on Denver media. And, I mean, if you're being real, Vance Joseph didn't have that mind control. Denver media was not afraid of Vance, but they're a little bit afraid of Vic Fangio.
Yeah, the website guy might sneak in there and throw a Bryce Callahan question. We'll take the website guy for the Broncos out of it. I'm talking about real journalists. Like
Don Fungio.
So I'll say it with a caveat of the website guy doesn't count. I'm talking about real. Well, we're going to have Nikki on. She's a real journalist. Jeff Legwall, Mike Kliss. These are Troy Rang. These are real journalists.
I think Vic will politely answer the first two questions about Drew Lock. Then the third question will come around, and whoever asks it, I hope it's you.
I'll leave myself out of it, because I could just ask five questions right in a row.
Well, they're going to get the death stare, and he's going to make it very clear that I'm done with the Drew Lock questions.
So, huh?
The next person to ask me it, you better watch out.
I would love to do that mock interview right now, you know, asking Coach Fangio questions to hear the same thing.
You want to be Coach Fangio?
Yes, I'll be Coach Fangio. Let's go.
All right, well, Coach Fangio, how did Drew Lock look yesterday?
Well, he looked okay. He came out there, he stretched, he put his jersey on, and yeah, he was out there.
Nice to clear the throat.
Did you adjust practice to get Drew Lock more involved?
Well, you know, if we're coming off of a bye, you know, guys are coming back and we're trying to make sure everyone is, you know, healthy in his hand. And, you know, he was out there.
Does Drew Lock have a chance to be the backup quarterback at least this week?
Well, we're still looking at things and it's going to take some practice before we're able to make a decision. But he did a nice job.
Did Drew Lock do anything out there to change your opinion?
Well, he's still learning to be a quarterback in this league, and he took a couple of reps today, but it wasn't anything spectacular.
Follow up. What could he do?
Follow up? Yeah. If a reporter said follow up, I would die laughing.
Yeah, sometimes you should.
Follow up.
What could he possibly do to change your mind?
Well, he could come out and start making a couple of throws. You know, Tim Patrick was activated off of IR, and, you know, they were working on a little chemistry on the side. But we need to see him complete.
You're not shutting down the conversation Don Fangio would do. Let me take a shot at being Don Fangio.
Okay.
Ask me. I'll be.
Coach Fangio.
What? You're ramping up for something, I can tell over there.
Yeah, did you have a game plan as a part of your practice to intentionally get Drew Lock reps today?
No.
Why not?
Did you play football?
I did, actually. Yeah, for a while.
Next question.
Coach Fangio, when you look at Drew Lock in, as far as the remaining of the season, does he fit the bill as far as all the meat sauce, the type of philosophy that you have?
All the meatballs and the pasta, you know?
Next.
Coach, where are you going to dinner tonight?
You're not, Nicky. You scared me. Where's Kliss? Kliss? Up yours, Kliss. I'm sick of you. Website guy. Where's the website guy? Throw me a softball by Bryce
Coach,
Callahan.
So Brandon Allen had a good first game, right?
Next.
No, he would have answered that one.
So Tim
Patrick.
He would
have loved to talk about Brandon Allen.
Tim Patrick, yeah. Let's talk about Tim Patrick.
Tim Patrick, how many passes will Tim Patrick catch from Drew Lock in practice?
Well, let me tell you about Tim. From Drew Lock, Next.
All the meatballs and the pasta, you know?
So that's the safe word right there, Drew Lock. That's the safe word.
We'll see how it goes. We'll have Nikki on here in a second. She can tell us, you know. I mean, the first question is just going to be, you know, how was Drew Lock yesterday, right? I mean, it's got to be.
Yeah. I hope somebody asked how many reps did he get. And based on,
I'm happy to throw that in there.
Base that off of a percentage, by the way.
What kind?
Be more specific.
I won't joke around. Here's what Fangio say. How many reps? What reps? What do you? He's got snaps.
So I want to know during offensive team periods, not scout team.
You got to be specific. There you go.
So ask him how many reps during the offensive scout or during the offensive period.
Right.
Did Drew Lock get?
I don't know. He was in there. He's mixing up. That's a tricky question because what you really want to know is, did he get any reps with the first team?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to know.
Right.
And I want to know what the percentage is.
And he's going to answer no to both of those.
Here's how I would do
it. This is what I've learned in asking these questions. Trust me. I've been there and done all that. If you are not, like, incredibly specific with your question, if there's anything vague whatsoever, like you say, how many snaps did he get? They're just going to blow that off. So if the question really is, how many snaps did he get with the first team in a competitive part of the practice, you better ask the question just like that. And you still might get blown off.
And then the follow-up is, over the next week or two, what is the plan to get him more reps?
We're just focused on tomorrow's practice. We want to be 4-6.
Well,
that's how coaches do it. It's that type of crap.
Yeah.
And all of his reps are going to come.
I don't blame
him,
by the way, for doing that.
And here's why Fangio has to do that. Because there really isn't a significant plan for Drew Lock. If there was, he could answer questions like that left and right. It would be no big deal. But if it was that case, he would have said things like that already. He would have come out and said, here's what we're going to do. The plan is for Brandon for the next two games. It'll be enough practice for us to get Drew, and Drew is going to be our backup, and we do expect Drew to start against the Chargers. But that's not what we got. We got the whole 4-6 thing, which means there's still, you know, I don't know. There's no significant plan for Drew Lock. Nikki Jabala joins us. She's from The Athletic, and she is part of these press conferences all the time. Nikki is brought to you by Ent Credit Union. We're speculating the first, well, let me ask you, first five questions to Vic Fangio tomorrow, all about Drew Lock, over under five. Excluding website guy, he doesn't count.
Website guy. Over.
Over five.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell you what they're going to be before they actually are asked.
Go for it. What do you think we'll hear?
What did you think of Drew Lock? How many reps did he get? Is there plans to get him more reps? Is there a chance he plays this weekend? What more do you need to see from him? Let's see. Can you tell if the virtual reality has helped? That one courtesy of Darren McKee.
Right, thank you.
Will he answer any of those honestly, Nikki?
What?
Is there one of those questions that might actually, you know, captivate him enough that he will give you an honest answer?
I think he's been fairly honest with Drew Lock this whole time. I think it's just not the answer that people want. He sounds pretty blunt when talking about Drew Lock and kind of how he's coming along and his progress in learning the system and all that comes with it. It's just not what most fans want to hear. They want to hear that the second-round quarterback is ready to start immediately and save the franchise, basically, right? So I think he has been honest. I think we might get some of the, you know, cliches this time around just because it's his first practice back, and Tuesday was so limited. It wasn't a full practice, so there's really not much to go on. But Vic he's usually the type to give it to you straight.
How is the mood inside of the locker room before the practice? And what did you notice about Drew Lock?
He was just sitting at his locker. We weren't allowed to talk to him until tomorrow, which was kind of a bummer, but I'm sorry now. Play nice.
So, Nikki, with Bryce Callahan, he was never placed on IR with that injured right foot. I mean, is it fair to say at this stage he's just, you know, a scout team practice player, or will they think to kind of putting him in at some point during the season?
Well, I think they're kind of treating this period much like they are the other actual IR guys and just kind of seeing how he does in practice and if he's going to even be able to play at some point, because you got to factor in both the medical side, you know, how's the foot feel? Is it still sore? Is it still giving him problems? Can he cut without issue? And then you have to actually give him time to get back into football shape, because he hasn't practiced in since September, but he hasn't played any live action since last December. He didn't play at all in preseason and definitely not in regular season. So, you know, his last time on the field in game time was the game he hurt his foot. So he's going to need some time, and then they'll have to decide, you know, is it worth even, you know, having him play that late in the season. I still think there's a chance they put him on IR, even if it's for the last couple games or whatever, just so they can bring somebody up. So him returning, I think, is a big sign. I think it's very encouraging, but it's certainly no guarantee that he'll be out there or play at all this season. Not yet, anyway.
Nikki, going back to Drew Lock here for a second. Gary Kubiak was in personnel last year. He was a part of the evaluation process. He was at the pro days. He was at the games right alongside John Elway. How much of an input did Gary have in the selection of Drew Lock, and would Gary approve, do you think?
Well, I don't know how much he was involved because he left shortly after Vic was hired, which was January. So he was there for a lot of the bowl games maybe, but not much pre-draft. So I think it was mostly Elway, Matt Russell, scouts, personnel, and then certainly Vic's new staff kind of evaluating Drew going into the draft. So I don't know that he had too much of an input on Drew. But I think just over the years, just in working with John, I think they've learned quite a bit from each other just in how they evaluate quarterbacks. I remember John actually saying this, how the quarterbacks he's had over the years as an executive and then also working with Gary they kind of changed his approach or opened his eyes to new things about different quarterbacks. He admitted, I think it was last year or a year before, that, you know, for the longest time he did pursue guys that kind of, you know, resembled him, you know, with a strong arm, taller guy. And it still looks like they're drafting that, but he says he's kind of evolving in what he looks for in quarterbacks and just his approach going into the draft each year.
All right, Nikki, any other notes from today?
Not a ton. Jawan James did not practice. I think that was kind of expected. So we'll see how he does later in the week, but not a whole lot to see in terms of practice today. So maybe more tomorrow.
All right. Thank you, Nikki. Appreciate it. Nikki Jabala, our Fan Broncos insider, courtesy of Ent Credit Union. Better rates, lower fees. Visit Ent.com. It is Hot Take Tuesday. Stefan, my man, what is your hot take?
Hey, guys. My hot take is the ownership situation starts to heat up with the Bolin family. They can't come to an agreement. So the NFL and the NFL commissioner have to step in. Mm. They end up selling the team. Jeff Bezos' wife ends up buying it.
That's funny.
Her first assignment when she comes in, she ends up just firing and getting rid of the whole scouting team and firing John Elway.
That's funny as heck.
All right.
Because Bezos' wife, how much did she get in the divorce settlement? Billions, right?
I want to say $120 billion.
No, what? No. He's only worth himself $111 billion. But I think she got billions, though. She did get billions.
I think she got half.
Boy, we'll have to do some digging on that, but that's a good one. Bezos' wife buys the Broncos. I think that's in the world of delusional, so I'm laughing at it, but I don't think that qualifies.
Be nice.
No, I'm being nice because it's funny that he went Bezos' wife, because that's how much she would have got in the divorce settlement, that she could do it if she wanted to.
Well, I mean, people have done a lot worse as far as to spite a spouse in a divorce. So even though it sounds far-fetched and I like it.
Oh, she would buy the team so he couldn't?
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Just to spite him. So the idea wasn't that far-fetched and wasn't that bad. I actually like it.
Yeah, it's totally.
Just think about
funny.
That.
It's funny.
Yes, it is funny.
It's a funny idea. Hot Take Tuesday's rolling on. 303-713-1043. That's our text line and the number to call. What's that, Richie? In the divorce settlement, what did she get?
$36.8 billion.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
You didn't say million. You said billion with the B.
Confirmed this, but I read today there's like a billion dollar tax bill that has to be paid off before anybody could actually buy the Broncos.
It complicates things significantly.
Meaning that if you want to buy the team, that's one thing. I mean, I think the value
you have to pay off that tax bill.
That's right.
That's right.
So I think the team's worth something like $3 billion right now, something like that. So you would really basically have to have $4 to $5 billion to buy the Denver Broncos. Now, that sounds ridiculous, right? But when you think of Bezos, who's worth $111 billion, I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying this. But if you're worth $111 billion, what's $5 billion?
Exactly.
It's just really not that big of a deal. I read yesterday that if Jeff Bezos spends $88,000, it's equivalent for most Americans who spend $1.
Different world, man.
Different world. Different world. And I don't know what, you know, Sir Richard is doing out there at Necker Island. You called it Nectar.
Which it's not Nectar.
No, it's Necker.
Nectar.
It's N-E-K-K-A-R.
Well, he's not doing like what Bezos is doing for sure.
I don't think, well, nobody's, I mean, who's worth $111
billion? You know what he's doing with $100 bills? I mean, he's just dropping them on the floor. See, you thought I was going somewhere else.
Yeah, I did.
You're dirty mind.
I did.
I said dropping them on the floor.
It's just a roll.
Yeah, I thought you were going somewhere else.
When we come back, more of your Hot Take Tuesday takes. We have movie passes, which is great for Terminator Dark Fate, Playing with Fire, a four-pack of movie passes to see both of those movies. So we'll take your calls and we'll take your texts. And we got to talk about Ralphie. There's been a development. And Tyler, you did Ralphie research today. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I mean, I knew most of it, D-Mac.
Oh, of course.
But I spent some time watching Ralphie today.
That's next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.